This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
Oh, home run. Good.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Rock Richardson.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Neutral Zone. I am your host this week, Cam Jenkins, and I'm filling in for Brock as he is away on his honeymoon. So we wish Brock a happy honeymoon, and he'll be back on August the 1st. And coming up on today's program, we released another interview from the Canadian Paralympic Committee Summit. And today we're featuring sitting volleyball athlete Heidi Peters and swimming athlete Daniel Doris. And of course, as always, we talk a little mainstream sports. I'm joined by Joshua Watson and Claire Buchanan. So let's get into this week's headlines.
Neutral Zone headlines.
As this week is the MLB All-Star Game, we send out a big congratulations to the four Toronto Blue Jays that will be represented. Pitcher Kevin Gausman, first baseman Vladimir Guerrero Jr., shortstop Bo Bichette, and second baseman Whit Merrifield. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will also participate in the Home Run Derby.
For the first time ever, there will be a World Youth Games in Bocce, and Bocce Canada will be sending athletes for the first ever Youth World Championship in Provera, Portugal, from July 8th to the 13th. The athletes that will be represented by Canada are Carter Plum from Brampton, Ontario, Olivier Roy from Montreal, and Nicole Lima from Oshawa, Ontario.
Catherine Henderson has been hired as President and Chief Executive Officer of Hockey Canada. Henderson received an International Olympic Committee diploma last year for her achievements to attain gender equity in sport when she was with Curling Canada. CBC reports that Henderson helped deliver an international symposium to the curling community to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. This is huge going into Hockey Canada to help shift the sport in the right direction for equality in sport.
And those are your headlines for this week. For today's chat topic, we'll be discussing the All-Star Game in Major League Baseball and the Home Run Derby. This is the second time that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been a part of the Home Run Derby. Now, ladies and gentlemen, do you like the idea of the Home Run Derby, and do you think that it does damage people's mechanics as it relates to their swing? Let's start off with Claire.
I have the same opinion about the All-Star break with baseball and any sport, is that I don't like it. I think it's there put in place as kind of another money-making opportunity, and I don't think it benefits the players in a positive way. I think that in baseball specifically, I think it does impact the mechanics that they are going through, and especially superstars like Vladdy. They are always perfecting their swing, and right now they're trying to get in a hot streak coming out of the All-Star break, and I don't think something like the home run derby kind of adds to that in a positive way.
I can understand your point, Claire, but I gotta disagree. The All-Star games in any sport are for the fans, and we want to drive as many fans to the games as possible. You're right, it is a money-making venture. Unfortunately, everything about professional sport is. In terms of, does it mess with a player's mechanics? I think it depends on the player. There are some players who have to alter their swings in order to be a productive home run derby hitter. But those are the kind of players that really shouldn't be in the derby in the first place, in my opinion. I think a player like Vladdy, who has been struggling, might actually benefit from this because he gets to get in the box and just have fun. He doesn't have to worry about, do I have to move this guy over? Do I have to hit the ball here, hit the ball there? He just has to see the ball and hit the ball. So I think it's going to be good for him.
Yeah, I think that when you're getting paid to be a baseball player and you're that good at hitting, it should not affect you moving forward. You know you're there to just hit home runs, and that's what you're concentrating on. Just like in practice, they would concentrate on maybe doing bunts or maybe hitting it to left field or hitting it to right field. So, and I'm sure maybe they practice their home run swing too. So I don't see how this is any different and how it would totally disrupt when they get out of the All-Star game to be able to, like how it's going to mess up their swing personally. I don't see how that would happen.
Well, at the same time, yes, they're not at the home run derby. They're not facing a variety of different pitches either. It's everyone's getting the same pitch all day long. And yeah, Josh, that's a good point. You can, it's a time you can just kind of quote unquote, turn your brain off and just swing the bat, and go back to, the feeling of just loving the game and being at the plate. I am a fan of it. I have watched it in the past, and it'd be cool to see if Vladdy can make history this year and go in the books with his dad. So it's going to be an exciting one, I think, for sure.
I think it'll definitely be cool to watch. I watch it every year. To be honest, I watch the Home Run Derby more than I watch the actual All-Star game itself. That's a whole other topic that we could discuss here. But yeah, for me, it's all about the fans. It's the ooh and the ah when those bombs start dropping into the outfield seats. And it's fun for the young kids, the young ball players who get to shag the fly balls that don't get over the fences. So I don't know. I have seen players who do get affected by being in a home run derby. But again, I'm not sure those players should have been there in the first place. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it tonight after I get a workout in. And we'll see whether Pete Alonso can repeat or whether it's going to be somebody else this year.
Yeah, and I just really enjoy, them trying to get the home runs. And, you know, when they get a hold of one, then, it's great to see. And speaking of getting a hold of one, if you want to get a hold of us on social media, here's how you can do that.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball!
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Today we are going to release another Canadian Paralympic Summit interview. We hear from sitting volleyball athlete Heidi Peters. And of course, our own Brock Richardson did the interview.
Let's start with the fact that you have been recently elected to the World Para Volley Athletes Commission. First, can you tell us about that?
I'm not exactly sure exactly when it started, but it's an extension of the World Para Volley Board, and they wanted to have some athlete representation on the board. So the Athletes Commission is 5 athletes, one from every zone of the world. So North and South America being one, Europe being one, Asia, Oceania being one, and Africa being one. So there's an elected representative from each zone, and then there's a 5th representative that's a global rep, which is the position that I got. So there's an election for that. So for my spot being elected, all the athletes in over the world voted for me. There were, I think, 6 candidates, and I won that election, which was exciting. Me and 5 other athletes meet throughout the year to just discuss the athlete perspective on our schedule, on our events, on the setup of events, relative to the athlete experience. And then the president and the vice president, I am neither of those, but more experienced members are the president and vice, and they sit on the World Paravolley board and they vote.
And how did you decide, listen, I want to get involved in this, I want to throw my name in the ring,
yeah.
I want to be voted for? How did that come to be?
We just got a general email, first of all, making us aware of it and that there were spots opening up. So Jose Rebolo is a Canadian sitting volleyball men's athlete, and he was on the board and I believe was the president for the previous term or two. So I know him as we're both Canadian, and I just kind of heard about it through him, and I knew that he was retiring and why one of the spots was opening up. So that's how I kind of initially got interested in it. I'm also taking political science as one of my double majors in university right now. So I'm hopefully in my life will do my master's in policy studies. So I'm kind of entering the political realm, and I think there's a lot of opportunity relative to sport and politics, and I'm really interested in how things get done. And I think, yeah, being in the places where decisions are made is important for change.
Of course. And for you, is it a 2-year term, a 4-year term? Like, can you kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I should know the answer off the top of my head. I believe it is a 4-year term relative to, or sort of aligned with, like, the quads of the Paralympics, so.
Okay, and what are the issues at hand that you foresee? Listen, we have to tackle X to get this done on behalf of the athletes.
It's not an issue that I brought forth, but the North South America, the Pan American representative, is, her name is Nikki Nieves. I believe I said that correctly. She's a female sitting volleyball player from the United States. She is the president of the Athletes Commission, and she brought forth the idea of having more of a season of our schedule. So we kind of compete all year. Our competition schedule is probably primarily April through September, which is a large chunk of the year. And it's really overwhelming to try to train at a full-time level and have a job and have a life. And for those that are married and have kids and have a lot of other things in school to consider. So having more of a 6-month window where tournaments are scheduled, that would really just help us plan our lives. And I think create a better culture for the sport and make it more manageable. It's a bit of an issue as parasport looks different in every country. For example, in Iran and in Brazil, and in some places in Europe, they have club teams. So those sitting volleyball and lots of parasports, they play all year round. Sitting volleyball is literally their job. That's what they do all the time. So it's not an issue for them to travel or to have a national team competition schedule all year. But for myself, I'm a student and I work and I also train. So it would be more helpful for my schedule if there was a specific set of months where I knew that, these are the only months that I'd be competing in. So that's kind of an issue from some athlete perspective that's come about. Other than that, it's just really input on uniforms, and there used to be quite stringent rules on what we could wear, but I think a main element of parasport is ultimately what we're comfortable in. So having more lenience in if we want to wear shorts or we want to wear tights underneath our shorts, how far away certain things are from the core, where events are held, how far away washrooms are, time allotments, for warm-ups, different things that are important consideration for parasport.
I think, it's easy for people on the outside who can say, this is what I think. Mm-hmm. Until you live in the situation and you're living, you're breathing, you're doing, it's hard. And I think, we often say, we preach, athletes first, but you need to recognize, listen, if you don't have the athletes on support, they're not going to perform for you as your country. And to speak about, the year round and doing this, it's, everybody says, it's so cool to be an athlete. And it's you get paid if you're blessed to be carded. And some people aren't carded. And it's but I still have to pay the bills. I still have to do this and I have to do that. It's very hard for those that aren't involved, even if they're involved from an outside perspective. Unless you're living and breathing it, it's very, very difficult to handle. I understand that you started sitting volleyball in high school. Or not sitting volleyball. Let me do that again. I understand you started volleyball in high school. What did you translate and learn from that you carried over to sitting volleyball?
I think just comfortability with the basic touches of the game. Having played volleyball, it's a very technical sport. So learning how to pass, learning how to set, learning how to tackle, those are all very technical skills. So those skills automatically transferred into the game. Sitting volleyball, being on a smaller court, a lower net, the game is automatically a lot faster than it is in indoor. So the speed was definitely tricky to get used to and a bit overwhelming. And in sitting volleyball, there's a lot more contacts with our hands. We set a lot more balls than use our platform, because when you're standing, like, your ability to like forearm pass a ball is different than versus like sitting on the ground and having that limitation in our range of motion. So there are a few differences in like preference of skill, but the general like concept of the game was obviously transferred over, like the positioning, the general strategy.
What was the hardest thing? You spoke about the easiest transition. What was the hardest thing where you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to take me a while to learn and master, quite frankly?
First of all, yeah, I'd say the speed is definitely hard. It's such a fast game. So the speed and the defense, like the ball is just coming so fast and so close to you. That's overwhelming. Defense is definitely an area for growth.
Now, one of the rules in sitting volleyball that I have seen, and I think to myself, that's got to be hard. There's one rule where you have to keep one buttocks on the ground at all times. Can you talk about how difficult that really is, or is it that difficult?
It is difficult. It's really difficult for people to even imagine sitting volleyball. People think we play in wheelchairs, we play on like sliders or something on the ground, but we're literally just sitting on the ground. Like no prosthetic legs, just like sliding around like with whatever body parts you have. So automatically, if you're sliding forwards, like your butt's gonna come off the ground. If you have two legs and they're sideways and you're like blocking at the net, it's really easy to like rock up on your knees and like have your butt come off the ground. So it's really, if you're going to block, like just the rocking forward, like it's easy to come up off your butt. So it actually is a little bit, especially at the net, I think more difficult than you would think to stay on your butt. It's a little more lenient in the back row. Like if you're digging a ball and you like pop up, like they're not going to call that. It's more specific to the front row, not cheating on your height. But yeah, it's, you can't just like, you used to be able to and they took it away. You couldn't like get up and like crawl or like hop and like go get a ball if it was dug so high and then sit back down and play. You have to, in all your movement of playing, stay on the ground.
Now, let's pretend that there's no official listening to this interview. Let's just put that aside. Are there tricks to the trade where you can kind of get an advantage? And I'm not putting you on the spot to say, this is what I do. But are there tricks to the trade that you can say, maybe I can get an extra little inch without, you know, the referee calling it on me?
It's a very, if not the most controversial area, like, of calls in sitting volleyball, because it can be quite inconsistent throughout matches. Like the down ref is supposed to watch the lifts and the up ref is watching the attacks. So the down ref is watching the blockers to see if they lift, but people can also lift on their attacks. So it's kind of dependent also what skill that you're doing. They just changed the rules. So for example, if I was blocking and I came off the ground, but I didn't touch the ball, they would not call me on a lift. So you could, to your advantage, rock up and like give yourself quite a bit of extra height and then take your hands away. If you don't touch the ball, they won't call.
It all has to happen very quickly, I'm sure.
To get that,
you know, advantage and to make sure that the referee and you are on the same page. And there's that human element where it's like, listen, you're human, I'm human, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your team? They're second in the world. What has gone into your success as a team to keep you at such that level where it's like, we're here and we're contenders?
That's a great and huge question. I think the primary thing with our team is just such drive to be so good and win. Like, we just want to win. And I say that, like, we even chirp ourselves, like, in practices and games, we're like, we don't think we want to win, like, enough. We have to, like, edge, like, competition, like, out of each other. But I think as a whole culture, we really, in the last, I would say last cycle for sure, have done, just, like, maybe to a year before Tokyo to now, excuse me, have done a lot of really intense culture work with our program and really just deciding like what values we want, such as excellence and integrity are things integral to us. So I think our dedication has really improved. And the more dedication with the athletes that we've had, the performance has automatically gotten better, and that just translates into to more funding every year and more awareness. So the more resources also that we've gotten have really helped our performance. I think at the core, we just all really love volleyball and we hang out off the court. We have a really strong bond. We go for team dinners. Like I genuinely like my teammates and want to hang out with them also. So having that bond on court is really special, to be able to be friends in life and off court, but also have that relationship on court where my teammates could say like anything to me and push me. And it's just because they believe in me. Like we've developed such like trust amongst us. So
sports like a family, you just said it, and families argue, families fight. How do you manage the, hey, this is not good enough, this is to our standards, without damaging the bond you just spoke about?
I think there's a time and place, if ever like an apology was needed for something said on court. There literally is like no time during the game to be concerned about like feelings per se, or be apologizing for tone or like things like that. Those are conversations in between games. That all comes with pushing each other, I think, extra hard in practices. I think we have a lot of room for growth in that, but it's a really fine line. Accountability is really just how we're going to get better. We have to be uncomfortable. We talk a lot about growth mindset on our team. Like it's like a check mark. Like you have to go down to get better. Like it has to get harder before you're going to do it. And we're changing a lot of things we're really trying to improve a lot of things about, especially our offensive system right now. So you have to try like different shots and different attacks, and they're not going to work. And you have to be able to push each other in games and say like, that was the wrong shot. Like you hit the wrong shot. Like, that's not, it's just a fact. It's not like you're bad at volleyball. It's like, we have to be able to do this. And to be able to take that personal element out, but have such a foundation of trust under it, I think is a really like beautiful also thing about sport. We just believe in each other so much, but like I said, are just trying to demand the excellence out of each other.
What's left for you to accomplish in your career as we sit here?
My biggest goal right now is a Paralympic gold medal. That would be, I get chills just saying that, like goosebumps.
I get it. And I've been retired for, 10 years.
It's really funny because I never, obviously, like I grew up able-bodied. Being a Paralympian was never on my radar. Even acquiring a disability, I never thought, oh, I want to be a Paralympian. Like that was a goal for me. Yes, I played volleyball in high school. I played club. I played a little bit competitively, but I never had desire to per se play like a national level or belief that I ever could or anything like that. So it's funny to now look back and be like, I want to be a Paralympic gold medalist, and to think about how much work I've put in. Yeah, it's feels like surreal even saying it. That would be the cherry on top. And I mean, a Paralympic gold medal in Paris would be dope. That would be awesome. A Paralympic gold medal in LA would be even more sweet, to beat the US on home soil. That would be just
there's
like
still that rivalry. It does not matter what sport it is.
But yeah.
People do not like losing to the United States.
No.
And vice versa.
I mean, you gotta like beat the best to be the best, or play the best to be the best. So
What's the one thing in your bag, besides for the obvious of the equipment, what's the one thing in your bag where you're like, man, I gotta have it?
For me, it's, I mean, not just one thing. I always have Tiger Balm on me. So like hardcore, like Chinese A535 for my traps mostly. And that's funny. And always a massage, like a lacrosse ball.
Love it.
Always, yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
So that was the interviews with Heidi Peters, sitting a volleyball from the Canadian Paralympic Committee Summit. And if you'd like what you heard and you want to leave us a voicemail, here's how you can do it.
If you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now. 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone. I am your host this week, Cam Jenkins, and I'm along with Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I figured that we'd talk about, you know, hockey, and let's concentrate this week on the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, it's always a whirlwind of action that's going on the end of June up until July 1st because of Free Agent Day. What are your thoughts on what the Leafs have done since they've hired Brad Treliving? And yeah, just kind of some of the changes that he's made. Josh, let's start with you.
Sure. I think the biggest one that surprised me was the signing of Ryan Reeves to a 3-year contract that I'm all for having a tough guy on the team. But that one did surprise me a little bit because he's kind of known for his toughness and not a lot else. There have been other moves. John Klingberg, the defenseman from Anaheim, did sign a 1-year deal with the Leafs as well. I think he's going to help our back end. There's some work that needs to be done there to get that up to speed. And then it's kind of neat to see Max Domi, in effect, coming home, even though he's never actually played for the Leafs, but his dad, Ty, played for the Leafs for many years. So all in all, an interesting offseason so far. I think we all agree that there's still work to be done, but interesting start.
Yeah, I agree with you, Josh. I can remember back when they signed John Tavares, and the city of Toronto just had that kind of warm, fuzzy feeling of one of their own coming home and putting on that jersey. So I think that the signing of Max Domi is bringing in that same feeling to Toronto of someone who is just really hyped to put on that jersey and be a Leaf. And he produced really well last year in 80 games. He came away with 20 goals and 36 assists, and he's a Canadian boy. So I think it's going to be fun watching him and seeing if he does have the same kind of grit and style of play that his dad did. And yeah, I do like the signing of Ryan Reeves as well. I didn't expect it to be a 3-year contract. And yes, I've been one to say that we do need some more physical play on the ice, and that's what's going to kind of be the difference maker in the playoffs, which it is. That's the big thing in the playoffs, is who's going to sell their body out to win a championship. And Ryan Reeves, hopefully he can do that for us without spending too much time in the penalty box, because we do that enough as it is. And I think the big the big question mark is, what will Nylander and Matthews get? And it's come to a point of, how much money do you want, or do you want a championship? And you see guys not getting as much money to kind of spread that out and have a more deeper lineup. But it seems that Nylander and Matthews want to get paid. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And yeah, it's another year for the Leafs to see how far we can go and what we can do. And I'm excited that we've been focusing more on our forward lines. We have put a lot of focus on our defense over the last couple of years in the trade deadlines. And we kind of have our foot in our mouth right now with Matt Murray still with us. And that's another question mark that will be interesting to see what happens, because if he doesn't get traded, the other option is to buy him out. But that, again, kind of kicks us in the gut for next year with the salary cap. And yeah, the one thing I'm really excited about that we saw just a glimpse of in the playoffs last year was Matthew Nyes. I love him as a player, and I am excited to see him back. And hopefully he's feeling good after his concussion, and hopefully he's doing well.
Absolutely. I think the Nylander situation is going to be the interesting one. I don't think they're going to let Matthews go anywhere. They're just basically going to say, how much do you want, and write the check. But I think Nylander is going to be the challenge, because Treliving, of course, was in Calgary for many years. And so he went through the whole Matthew Gaudreau and I got that wrong, Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk situations, where Gaudreau especially opted not to sign in Calgary and dragged it out, and then they didn't get anything for him in the end. I don't think Treliving's going to let that happen again with a guy like Nylander. I think if Nylander decides by the time the season's ready to start that he's not prepared to sign, then I think we'll see him dealt before the season starts. But I could be wrong. We'll see what happens.
No, I don't think you are wrong, Josh. I think he will be dealt. You know, I even posted on Twitter, I think he's at most a $10 million player, and that might be, you know, taking it too much. But on an 8-year deal, considering how the cap's going to rise, you know, I wouldn't object to Nylander getting $10 million a season as long as he signs for 8 years. Because I think that at that point in time, by the time year 3, 4, 5 rolls around, it's going to be consequential because of how much the cap's going to rise. In regards to, you know, the other things that have been going on with the Leafs, Ryan Reeves, it's good to have some tough and gritness, but like this guy, he's already 35 years old, I believe, and for 3 years, he's going to be 38. He can't really skate too well, from my understanding of looking into things.
He's not a goal scorer.
He's there.
And he's not going to be on a line with Matthews and Marner. He's not going to be on the line with Nylander and Tavares if those are the first two lines. So if somebody takes a run at them, like, he's not going to just come over the boards, because if you come over the boards when it happens, then you're going to get penalized anyway in a game misconduct, I believe, for coming over the boards. So I don't really see, you know, and I don't play hockey at the NHL level, but I don't see how that's going to work. But you can bury his 1.3 or whatever it is in the minors and be done with it. And so that's not a big deal in my estimation. Klingberg, it's only a 1-year deal, and he's got it at $4.1 million approximately. He was atrocious with the Ducks. He was like the worst defenseman last year. Like, for a defenseman, he does not know how to play defense. He just knows his offense, and he can get it out of the D zone and, you know, get it up to the forwards. And I guess that's what they're looking for. So if you pair him with the right defensive partner that actually plays defense, then that might be okay, because, you know, so, and considering Klingberg wanted a long-term deal a couple of years ago, and he wanted like $8 million a season for 8 years, and now he's down to a 1-year deal at $4 million, like, his stock has plummeted. So, you know, you got to take some chances, and I don't blame the Leafs for taking a chance, because they do need to get more offense. And then what's the other? Domi, he's not Ty. So Leaf Nation, don't put him in that where he should wear number 28 or that he's going to fight like his dad. He is a completely different player, so do not box him into that, because you're going to be disappointed. Take him for who he is. And I really like the signing of Bertuzzi, to get him for 1 year to show him what he can do. You know, I think he will go to the hard areas, which is really good, because too many times in the playoffs, I always said, like, the Leafs, they have this rectangular box that they stay outside of rather than go right in by where the goalie is. And Bertuzzi's one of those guys will go right in front of the net and isn't worried about getting hit. So I really like that Bertuzzi signing for 1 year, and hopefully that flourishes into an 8-year deal, because as you may or may not know, the cap is going to start to go up next year. And that's why you see so many NHL UFAs signing just 1-year deals, because they're like, okay, I don't want to sign a long-term deal because I know the cap's going up. And if I show what I can do, then I can sign for 8 years starting next year. So it's really smart on behalf of the players. But as far as management goes, they would prefer to know, you know, what they can do long-term to be able to fit everybody under the cap. And then finally, yes, you have Matthews, you have Nylander needing long-term contracts. Those two should just go in a room and talk to one another and realize, okay, we took as much money as we could last time, and look where it got us. It only was like, could get $900,000 players or like fringe people. If we take $1 million or $2 less each per year, That's another $4 million you can put into the pot and potentially get a really good defenseman, because they're going to need more defensemen.
Or a goalie. I mean,
well, yeah, the goalie. Absolutely.
Horrendous situation.
And Matt Murray. Well, and if you're buying
these guys are going to get that money in sponsorship deals. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
This is what drives me nuts about these big deals and these players asking for so much money.
Yep.
You're a superstar. It's like LeBron James asking for too much money. You know what I mean? Like, why do that to essentially the rest of your team when you could be helping them out, bringing in better teammates?
But on the other, like, I do see it from the player's point of view, because for a player, the average of staying in the league is 5 years, 6 years, maybe. And I'll say maybe 10. Like, there's not too many that end up being 15, 20 years. Those are only your really good players. So you only have a certain amount of time to make money. So, you know, I'm not opposed to them getting everything they want, but they also have to realize if they get what they're absolutely worth under a cap system, they're not going to leave anybody any money for anyone else to join the team so they can, you know, potentially win the Stanley Cup. And who's to say, if you give Treliving an extra $4 million or $5 million, who's to say that he's going to get the right defenseman?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I think we've got to see where the cap goes. I think we've got to see what happens with the Nylander situation, because ultimately those things are what's going to either handcuff us or give us the opportunity to improve. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So let's switch it a little bit here, and let's go over to the NBA, to the hard court, and let's talk about Denver. They're a great team. I think they've got a great bench. And, you know, do you, ladies and gentlemen, think that they can repeat next year?
I absolutely think they can. I mean, Murray is healthy. And to have him have a season like he did after an injury is just remarkable. And him and Jokic are, they're the best two-man offense in the league right now. And It's going to be exciting, because they're in the prime of their game right now. I just see them getting better as a duo. And I personally don't know what their trade situation was like. But whoever they have around them, I think is just going to be the cherry on top, because their whole system runs through the pick and roll with them too. And they're good from every spot. It's not a pick and roll inside outside game. They can both shoot threes. They can both have range from wherever they want to, and they both can go to the hoop as well. So I see them very much being in the finals again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's very hard for me to imagine a situation where they don't at least get back to the final. I suppose it does depend on what a team like Golden State or maybe the Lakers do. Can they put enough pieces together to challenge? But when you've got Jokic and Murray and DeAndre Jordan and Aaron Gordon, like, this is a powerhouse of a team. And it'll be really interesting to see what they can do and see what the rest of the league can throw at them, because, I mean, they moved through the league pretty well this year, so why couldn't they do it?
Now, what do you think, because a lot of the times to repeat as champions, you do have to have some changeable pieces or even to add to kind of keep that passion there in order to be able to get through the season, because it's a long season, a lot of games. You know, what do you think, if anything, that they need to add in order to repeat? Claire, let's start with you.
I guess just a deeper bench. They already do have pretty good bench right now. Like you said, it's a long season, so having players that you can kind of spread that time on the court out between and not put people in situations where they're overworking their body and they're risking injury, that I think that's the most important piece, especially in the NBA. You see a lot more injuries than other sports in the NBA, and just kind of a lot more players taking longer times to get back. And I think that's going to be the most important piece, especially with their superstars. You need a deeper bench so that you can rest a Jamal Murray and you can rest your superstars around them as well. And I think that's what championship teams are made of, is that you can utilize every single person that you have, and giving those moments to the rookies that don't get a lot of time on the court, of giving them when they do have those moments to learn and get on the court and get those touches in is important. And I think, like the Toronto Raptors right now, we're in a rebuilding situation right now. We only have two or three guys that were on the 2019 championship team. And that's going to be important for Toronto specifically as well, is really finding the situations where they can use different people at different times so that everyone's growing at the same pace and peaking at the right time.
Yeah, it's always a fine balance between having your veterans on the floor and getting your new guys the reps that they need in order to learn and to grow. I do know that they've signed their draft pick Julian Strother to his rookie scale contract, so he's there. They've also added Justin Holiday, which should be a nice piece for them. But it doesn't seem like they've lost a lot of players from their team. So if you're an NBA champion once and you're rolling it back with the same team, I still think you got a pretty good shot.
And that's fair. I just know sometimes you need that extra couple of pieces of people that have never won an NBA championship and that have the fire and the passion inside them. And you need that because sometimes people, I don't want to say become lackadaisical. That's definitely the wrong word to use, but
you get complacent.
Complacent. Thank you. That's probably the best word, is complacent. So you need those other, vets that have not won before that really want it to be able to push the other people. Because it's easy to say, yeah, okay, I'm making $40 million or $50 million a season, and that should be enough motivation to be able to do well. But sometimes it's not just about the money. Sometimes you do need some other people to kick you in the donkey butt and to be able to get going. So why don't we talk a little bit about the Raptors, since we are talking about the NBA and the hard court? And what did you think of the signing of Grady Dick? Josh, let's start with you.
I think when you look at his shooting numbers, you can't argue with that. That is something that this team has lacked last year. In losing Fred VanVleet, I think we have to have something that we can plug into that spot. I'm not sure that Dennis Schroeder or Jalen McDaniel is going to be that guy, but I'm also not the biggest basketball fan, so maybe I don't know their game as well as I should. But it was very interesting to me that as soon as Fred's move to Houston was announced, they immediately had the news that they were signing Dennis Schroeder. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for a couple of years.
I still am interested in the team. I want to see what Darko Rajakovic has in store for the team, considering that he's a new voice in a locker room that's been the same for a long time. Even when Nick Nurse was hired, he was a holdover from the previous regime. He was an assistant who was promoted, so this is a completely different person. He's from a different organization. I want to see what he can bring to the team.
Yeah, one of the things that Toronto has done is not only completely change what the team looks like on the court, but also in the office and in the coaching positions as well. It's a completely different organization than it was last year. And I'm happy about the signing of Dick. He is a sharp shooter, and to come in as that young of a guy and already have that shooting potential in his pocket is huge. And I think the biggest thing that he'll be tested is, can he have the same effort and consistency on the defensive end? That's, I think, the most exciting part about the Raptors team recently, is that we win games when we're chasing for balls and we're not giving up on plays. And that's what Freddie gave us as an organization. And I think Gary Trent Jr. also gives us a lot of shooting opportunities and a lot of defensive, responsibility as well. He's very good on both ends. And just like Nylander, there's this whole up in the air situation with Pascal of where is he going to go and where is he going to end up? And will he still be a Raptor soon? And I'm looking forward to this season because it's completely different and it's a very different looking team. But Gary Trent Jr. has become one of my favorite players, and I've liked how deep our bench has become as well. So I'm excited for this upcoming season.
Yeah, for me, I don't watch enough Raptors, but Trent seems to be one of those guys. Kind of like
Morris Peterson.
Is it Morris Peterson or did I go too far back? I think I went too far back. We traded somebody to Portland to get Gary, and they kind of remind me of the same kind of guy where they have to keep putting up shots in order to find their range.
Mm.
And when you
Norman Powell, I believe is who you're
yes,
speaking
Norman
of.
Norman Powell, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, yes.
So that kind of scares me a bit because if you start the game and you go through the first quarter ice cold, I don't know that you get that back, and we end up trying to feed you the ball, and have you throw up bricks. Like, I need a guy who can shoot and get his shot fairly quickly so that we don't get buried in games. I feel like that happened a lot last year where we're trying to get guys hot, and they just don't find their range. So
yeah,
again, I'm not a basketball player. Maybe that's just how shooting goes, but to me it felt like we spent a lot of time trying to get guys going.
Yeah, there's
you're an NBA basketball player, know how to shoot.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. There's got to be that kind of self-awareness of like, okay, this just isn't a night for me. You know what I mean? Let me help get other guys open and get other guys hot. Yeah. And I'm excited. Another player of mine that I like some other people have different opinions on them is Malachi Flynn. I like him. I've liked him since he's come into the league, and he's been patient and he's sat on the bench and I think he's done his due time. And he is one of those players that I think coming off the bench, I don't see him being a starting player, but coming off the bench, he has produced for us very well. And you hit it right on the nose, Josh. There's got to be that, okay, like this isn't working. Why, you know?
Yeah.
Beat a dead horse, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly.
You got to change something, especially, and that's where the coaching comes in. And I hope to see that's where more coaches are taking risks, but also recognizing that, hey, we need to actually scale this back and try something different.
That's why I think it's good for Nick Nurse. And, now that he's gone, I think they needed a new coach and a new voice. And that's why I'm so glad they got a new coach because, like all coaches, eventually they just want to go with their veteran players or who they like. But you have to remember the other end of it where you've got to develop players and get them on the floor and playing some meaningful minutes too. And I think Nick Nurse didn't do that. And I think this new coach is really going to be able to do that. So I'm really happy that they do have the new coach. And as far as Siakam goes, man, if they're not going to keep him, do not let them walk away like you did with Fred VanVleet. Like, you've got to get something. Like, Fred VanVleet just walked away for nothing. And you can't do that. You need assets in some way, shape, or form. And with the comments that Fred VanVleet's been doing on podcasts and so on and so forth, like, he was never coming back. And, like, good for him. He got paid. He got paid, what, 40 to 45 million a year for 3 years? 130 million? Like, get paid. Good for you. But, yeah, like, we should have got assets for him.
He's always been one to bet on himself. And so that's what he's done here again. And good on him. Like you said, free agency is there for the players to get what they feel they deserve. And so I really hope it works out for him. I don't know that Houston is a great spot for him. However, We'll see what happens. I like the fact that you brought up Malachi Flynn, Claire, because I'm really hoping that he's a guy who benefits from a coaching change, because sometimes there are just guys, they get in the coach's doghouse and they can't get their way back out. The coach goes, a new guy comes in, and all of a sudden, hey, I can actually play basketball. What a concept.
Yeah, you get a chance at a new first impression.
Exactly. And I don't think he's a bad player. I just don't think he fit in the system that Nurse wanted to run. And so Nick just kind of passed over him and said,
Nurse never let him play.
We'll use you when we're ready for you. Just go sit on the bench. And that's unfortunate, especially for a young player. So I'm excited to see what happens too. I'm one of these people, I try to watch basketball. I enjoy some games, but every once in a while, it gets too much and I turn it off. So I'm really hoping that this year the team is more consistent so that I can get excited. I want to support my hometown team.
Absolutely. And I'd love to be able to support them as well. But like, I can't get over the last trade deadline of the people that they kept that they should have traded and they didn't. And the biggest one being Fred VanVleet, because now he's gone for nothing. And I need to get over it. You know, I'll go see my therapist and have a chat with them and try to get over it. But, you know, it's hard. So I want to do our way too early picks who are going to win the NBA championships for next year. Who do you think is going to win the NBA championship for next year and why? Claire, let's start with you.
I'm going for a repeat. I would love to see Murray get two in a row. I've really enjoyed watching his journey throughout the NBA, and to see a Canadian boy win a championship is always nice. And the Canadians aren't hugely represented in the NBA. There's not a lot of us, so it's nice when one of us gets a ring. And I just think that they're definitely going to get back to the NBA Finals, and it'll just be interesting to see who's up against them.
Absolutely. I do agree. I think Denver has a very strong chance of repeating. I know that's not great radio, Cam, but I do believe that.
That's okay.
Having said that, what I will give you is I'm interested to see what will happen in a few places. One of them being Philadelphia with Nick Nurse.
You took mine.
Sorry. I want to see what will happen in Philadelphia. I want to see if the Nick Nurse show plays well there, or if the fans are throwing things at him by game five. We'll see what happens. I'm curious to see if the Bucks can make any kind of run, because they've been one of those teams with Giannis that everybody expects great things out of, and it just never seems to come together. So we'll see what happens. And we haven't even really touched on, and we're running short on time, I'm sure. We haven't even touched on the fact that Damian Lillard wants out of Portland. And so what's Portland going to do? Are they going to be able to get enough back to field a team? So lots of intrigue, but I do think Denver is going to repeat.
So we're going with two Denvers to repeat for my count. So I'm going 76ers. I think with Nick Nurse there, he's a new voice. And I think he's going to be able to get that team firing on all cylinders. I wonder about James Harden. I've kind of lost track of where he goes.
Will he stay or will he go?
Who knows when that guy is going to end up anywhere.
Because I thought he was still with the 76ers. Is he? Okay, I thought so. So be interesting to see whether or not he stays. And if he does, how Nick Nurse can utilize him. But if he gets traded, like I think he wants to, and I've heard rumblings that he wants to go back to Houston, and he got traded from Houston to 76ers, so he's just a sideshow Bob at the end of the day. So we'll wait and see. But my way too early pick for the NBA championships is going to be the Philadelphia 76ers. So with that, this is the end of our show. For this week, I would like to thank Claire Buchanan, Josh Watson. Our technical producer for this week is Jordan, and our producer for this program and regular host is Brock Richardson. And I'm Cam Jenkins, and until we meet again,